Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
It's 9:15 now on a dismal Saturday morning in Cork. One of the wildest mornings, in fact, I've experienced, and I'm driving along Patrick Street now, heading on to our Leaside clinic, which we'll be attending later in the morning at 49 Grand Parade. Traffic is quite light at the moment, even though it's quite close to opening time, and there are very few people on the streets, and the streets look absolutely windblown and rain shot. Coming around the corner now into the Grand Parade, slide on the Chapel of Wee, this fine wide thoroughfare, and sweeping around left here. Traffic is slightly heavier now, and stopping at the lights. And when we come along, we'll pass the City Library, and now ahead of us, one can see the Fianna Fáil buildings in Cork at 49 Grand Parade. It's a shabby enough building over a florist, and it bears the sign Fianna Fáil across the front of it. Below it there's the Legion of Mary Hostel, and further on there is the river and the various monuments, and up to the left is the South Mall. And traffic, even in the last few minutes or so, has stepped up appreciably, and people are creeping along by the side of the walls of their houses as the wind is very, very strong, and I suppose people are trying to avoid the odd flying slate. This Fianna Fáil building, which as I said is over a florist, is has a present preservation order on it now, because its exterior apparently is unique among the buildings in Cork City. It's now a few minutes to 9, and our first customer for the clinic is not scheduled until 10:15, when I believe the Taoiseach, Jack Lynch, would be arriving. But already, one of the constituency workers is there at the door, and he's taking away some of the rubbish bins from outside, and there's a young woman with a small child standing in a cranny close by. Obviously she is going to the clinic, and will perhaps be among the people we'll meet later this morning in our Leaside clinic.
As Jack, you know.
And then up the stairs with Ollie Walsh, the constituency worker. Ollie, who has known Jack for a long time, who enjoys his work for the party, enjoys meeting the people on Saturday mornings. Ollie, whose memories, in fact, of Jack and the Taoiseach and the clinics go back a long, long time.
I remember well the 1948 election. That's the first election he got elected.
What was he like at the time?
Quite. Well, you know, as any young up-and-coming politician getting into the political line, quiet and shy and a bit nervous like anyone else, but as you see, he fooled himself in the long run.
Has he changed much since he became Taoiseach?
More humbler, I think, than he ever was.
Very humble.
And he was a fine hurler in his time
as
well?
Oh, he was, yes, indeed. There's very few can win six All-Irelands in a row, and then it's not easy playing against teams like Kerry and Tipperary, Kilkenny and Dublin.
Did you see him as a hurler too?
Why did you?
How much of his skill as a hurler has he brought to the political field, would you say?
I suppose his coolness and his calmness, more than anything else, he has brought into the political arena.
Dan O'Connell, another party worker, is a shy, diffident, soft-spoken man, but he's certain of at least one thing.
He's a very natural man. I think he's one of the greatest. Jack is a good man. There's no, you know, there's something about him like that attracts people.
It's now 9:15 on the Saturday morning, and the Fianna Fáil clinic in the Grand Parade in Cork is beginning to fill. It's something like a dentist's waiting room or perhaps a church as they sit in serried rows of forms, communicating or not communicating, each jealous of his or her own interview, his or her own impending success with an Taoiseach or someone else. How important is the clinic?
Oh, I think it is one of the most important links with the public representatives and the general public in the city here. They have an opportunity to meet the Taoiseach, the deputies, all the councillors, as they wish. They come to us sometimes and we make arrangements for them. We make appointments for them.
And Denny, what do they come to you about? What are general kind of problems now?
Well, many of the problems they shouldn't need to come to people at all, but social welfare problems, pensions, things like that. There may be delays with the department answering or communicating with them, and they feel by coming to the public representatives that the thing would be speeded up or things like that, you know.
I suppose much of it is a lack of information.
Certainly, that is correct, yes.
The clinic, then, is a very personal business.
It is. It is. It is. It is. It is because I have another problem to know, and it isn't personal, but it's personal to someone very near to me, like. Mm. And I feel that I'd be taught one way or the other the answer to that problem.
I suppose coming into the Taoiseach is something special, is it?
It is, although I'll tell you, it's my first time coming to him.
9:45 a.m. and our clinic is filling rapidly. The pictures of Jack Lynch and Eamon de Valera, which formerly looked down on an empty hall, now look on rows of people stretching down the stairs. Two other TDs are walking away, and Sean O'Reilly is carrying on his conversation with me about an Taoiseach. He knows precisely what he wants.
I think that he has become definitely the man that he always was, but he's more of it now.
What's your impression of him as a person?
Tremendous, of course. Tremendous, because I've had personal dealings with him many years ago. Mm. We had a problem, a personal problem. Mm. And it was about getting somebody in the hospital in Dublin urgently. Mm-hmm. And he done that. Oh, within an hour of being right, of getting the phone message on that Tuesday night, when the doctors in Cork and that couldn't do it.
Gerry O'Mahony, how important do you think these clinics are on Saturday mornings?
Well, very important. Especially from the fact that people can meet the Taoiseach really without any appointment. As far as I know, it's the only part of the world that happens. Certainly we had people here from time to time, especially English press that came over, people from the Times magazines, Times paper, and also from a television programme, and apparently this surprised them, the easy way that a person can walk in and have a word with the Taoiseach and discuss any problem they have.
It's important too, I suppose, Gerry, to the politicians themselves.
I think it is, because he obviously will meet the people and they will tell him what they think. I suppose generally any minister or Taoiseach is generally surrounded by his own supporters, and they're not always going to tell you the truth. But I think when Taoiseach comes to Cork, or any minister, he'll get the facts of life, and especially here in Cork, quicker than other, he'll be told what in all probability, he'd be told how to run the country.
The clinic, of course, is straight communication, person to person.
Totally. Nobody takes any. People come along and they have a choice between the TDs, the minister, and the Taoiseach. I suppose when the Taoiseach arrives, a certain amount of people change their mind and they might be coming to a TD, and obviously they go to the Taoiseach. Because, first of all, he's so easy to approach and he listens to, as a matter of fact, his patience often surprises me, because some people, when they go into him, they can go from one problem to another problem, and I'm sure they really keep him there all day. I've often seen him come in the morning at 10:30, especially a fine summer's day, and he'll be there at 4 or 5 o'clock in the evening.
Taoiseach's clinic is at the top of the stairs. A bare room, one table, two phones, two chairs, a large window looking out on the city car park, an electric fire, a howling wind, two RTE microphones, waiting and listening. All is set, except that I must ask each client if he or she is happy to be recorded. The ratio is stark. 70% for, 30% against. That's democracy in action. There's no selection, no careful screening. 10:15, the word is, he's here. Atmosphere, temperature, attitudes all change. Enter on Taoiseach. Friendly, cool, businesslike. He's the only one to take off his coat in that room.
Now tell me, what's the problem?
Well, first of all, it's a local problem, and it's probably a city problem. The bus schedules.
And that's on the...
Old people.
Turner's Crossroads, is it?
Yeah. They've really upset. Yeah. Something that was working smoothly over the last few years.
Yes.
They've changed and they've thrown everyone into disarray. Old people that normally used to go into town to 10:30 mass in a weekday. They're lost. Buses have been changed.
But can't have been changed so drastically that there wouldn't be a bus running about 10:30?
They are, actually, because I picked up an old man the other day and he said to me, I saw him at the bus stop outside the bus office.
Yes.
The bus garage, and he said to me, they've upset the buses completely, and I know he was particularly trying to get to Mass in St. Francis. I said I would mention that.
It's a question of the changing the time.
Changing the times. It is.
And the old people can't get into town for late morning mass.
Late morning masses.
I see the point. Yes.
But
what is the frequency of the buses?
It's not too good at the moment. Would it be
10-15 minutes now?
They would be around that, but there's a terrible lull lately. We don't know whether they're understaffed or undermanned.
So that the schedules have been changed,
and the
frequencies have been lengthened. Is that
that's
it?
Right? Yes. And that's it. And bus stops have been changed, and you'll never know about that either. You'll just see it another 10 yards down the road.
But I think the guards are involved in that. That's only done with their knowledge and consent. But however, I'll check up on the timing of the buses and the frequency and see what I can do about it.
No,
we have another problem, Mr.
I have. It's about a telephone for a person Taoiseach. That the information is there on that.
It's
all there for you.
And are there any special reasons why?
The reason why they were living in home with their mother, the husband and wife. She's had some drastic accident. So
the mother.
And that's enough. Yeah, the wife.
Oh, the wife. Yes.
They left, bought a house with a phone in it, in Baden Temple.
Yes.
They got down on the phone. They won't connect the phone for them.
And the Baden Temple address is here as well.
That's right. And that's where they're living now.
I see.
There is a phone in the house, but
there's a phone, but they won't connect it.
Yeah.
And they had a phone in their old house.
And the mother had, that was their mother's, but they left that with her. You see, they were married and they went out.
And the mother is still living in the old house.
She is. There is a medical certificate in the post office as regards this man's wife's condition. The phone is the only way to be connected up.
I see. But what does he spend, I suppose he does, like any married man, spend most of his time out at work?
That's right, yeah.
And she's not well at the moment.
And there's a certificate there to prove that.
And have they got a family?
She's expecting, actually.
I see.
And I don't know how the anymore. It was one of my own common members came.
That's to do about, yeah. That's anyway, true. I have all the pictures, the house and the phone number in the old house. Well, now, the mother is still retaining the phone in the old house.
She is. She is, yeah.
Just to repeat then, the phone is in the old house, And all the wires laid and everything.
Everything is there, and just a matter of connecting them.
And they won't connect them.
Unless they get the number away or
I'll
something.
I'll make inquiries about that.
Yeah, well,
the point is, of course, that's a possibility, because in many of those areas with the big new housing estates, the lines are almost completely overloaded, and unless they can provide new lines, and that's a slow operation, it's possible, as you said, that the phone has been given to somebody else.
It's possible the number was given, that's why. Yeah.
Well, I'll check it out anyway, and I'll let you know. Good morning, Father Coughlin.
Good morning, Mr. Ernst. Thank you very much for meeting me.
I take it you come in your capacity as President of Mochlin and Tua.
Yeah, it's just that we see opportunity. We would like to see the organisation.
Excuse me. Yes? Who are you looking for? I'm here, yes? Speaking, yeah. Oh, yes, Mr. McCarthy, yeah. Are you in town or are you at home? Are you in Bandon, yeah. About another hour and a half, I'd say. Yeah. Would you be able to make it in that time? I thought you'd be here. Well, listen, you couldn't mention it on the phone, no? You wouldn't like it. Okay, then. Yeah, I know. Well, I tell you what then, if you could get up on your bike and come in. Yeah. At least that anyway, probably up to about 12:45. Have you a car, have you? I should make it in time, so. Right or bad, thank you. Any further, you're telling me that you have,
we have
plans for
development and expansion. We would like to see higher level of support from the Department of Education, and I decided that this is a constituent of yours. I thought that you might be able to help.
It's interesting that a Catholic curate in Cork City is president of Mochlin na Tua. I suppose you have had associations with him before you came to Grána Brothar.
I did. I had, and I'm not in Grána Brothar.
Oh, Farnry, I'm sorry.
Farnry.
Farnry, yes. Yeah.
I did have associations with them because I was out in Ballymartle for a while, and I was in Skibbereen for a while.
Yes.
But people are under the impression that Mochlin na Tua is a totally rural organisation, and this is not so. We have clubs in Farnry, we have clubs in Dublin, we have clubs in Galway,
yeah.
We would have clubs in a lot of fairly big towns in Ireland.
What kind of activity now would you do in Farnry? Mochlin na Tua is, by its very definition, a country organisation, the youth of the countryside, so to speak.
We have seven different kind of programmes which we use in Farnry, and we have seven different clubs actually, and they do different things depending on their kind of on their own interests
and their own environment
and so on.
Yes,
and some of the clubs would be doing fairly sophisticated projects about citizenship and about homemaking and that.
Excuse me. Hello. Good morning. Oh, there you're cut off. Okay, she can back if she wants me.
Yeah, and others would be doing fairly basic things. Some club did a bit of actually reading and writing. And
I see.
That, you know, so they're very alert.
But at the moment, you get your main support, I take it, from a grant through the Department of Education. Is that
well,
it?
We do.
Or maybe not your main support, it's a substantial portion of it.
We do. We do all our fundraising at local level ourselves. We're responsible for the finances of clubs and district councils. Mm-hmm. We're totally responsible for that ourselves, and about approximately 2/3 of our funding at national level comes from the Department of Education. The others come from our own sources.
All your own sources. Yeah. And anyway, like most of these voluntary organisations, that the more money they get, the more they can use. So,
well, I suppose that is true.
Well, listen, Father, I'll make inquiries about it anyway. Naturally, I can't give an indication at this stage in advance of the budget, but however, I'll make inquiries to see to what extent we can provide further assistance for you. Next month, I'll be 30 years a member of the Dáil, and I have been doing it continuously ever since. 30 years ago, that was in February 1948.
It must be a fairly daunting experience for a start.
It is one at the beginning. One feels that you couldn't really consider the kind of difficulties that people run into until you come up against them. I often say that the vicissitudes of life that affect people, they become very well known to politicians.
It makes it all very personal in here, doesn't it?
Well, it is, you see. Most people come in here and I encourage them to speak freely, and if there's anything confidential that they want me to pass on, I naturally keep it to myself. But by and large, a lot of them have genuine problems. A lot of them who come have problems that will be solved anyway. There might be people who apply genuinely for old age pensions or things of that nature. But they feel, by getting access to their public representative, at least they're getting attention, and that's probably the main function. But you do as well, of course, get the opportunity of keeping in touch with a cross-section of the people you represent and get to know what their problems are.
It's a great example, isn't it, really? So it seems to me, anyway, in democracy, access to the Taoiseach or to any Taoiseach they like.
Well, I think that's part of the game, so to speak. Every TD all over the country has to hold clinics, and a lot of the people who come, of course, go to the other TDs of different parties as well. Some people who go their rounds don't often have the best case, but nevertheless, I think it is, as you say, an exercise in democracy, and it's important that people have access to the people that they vote for and put into their parliament.
Enter Gus Healy, A.A. Healy, former TD, former chairman of the party, former Lord Mayor of Cork. He's a personal friend, but he, like everyone else, is here too on business.
Well, I came in more or less as a trustee because I wanted to read this letter and see that I'm stuck here, and I would have had a meeting of the trustees this weekend to suit you.
Yeah.
But now I think I'm going to postpone it till the next time you're down, and I'd like to know when that will be.
Well, it'll be within the next couple of weeks again. In fact, we'll be down next week, but I'm going to West Cork, and I'll be...
You wouldn't be able to have a meeting here, even for a quarter of an hour.
I could, yes. I could make a meeting, perhaps.
But if I have...
On Friday forenoon, I'm going to I'm going to have a look at the road planning problem. With the county manager and the city manager.
Oh, good.
Sometime on Friday. The exact time isn't yet fixed. And... I could fit it in either before or after that meeting on next Friday.
Well, if I have this information which I'm waiting, I'll get in touch with you in Dublin. Yeah.
But I thought we had fixed up all our legal problems about the acquisition of the property.
Yes, this is purely the fact that the documents which are agreed to by both sides have not been returned to their solicitors, so we can't.
And who's at fault there?
Our tenants.
Oh, yes, I see.
Haven't returned the documents.
And no, it seems to be impossible. But didn't we...
we agreed to terms, yes.
In an amicable agreement with them for
absolutely,
terms and everything?
I thought all this would be cleared up, and our solicitor was very embarrassed about it.
Yes.
You see...
But what can we do?
Most important thing is that we want to start renovating this premises.
Yes, yeah.
By the way, could you tell me, were you in the... here when this was bought?
I was, yes. It was the late Martin Harvey.
Yes, sir.
Negotiated the sale of the remaining part of the lease from O'Leary's. There were electrical contractors
And radio
people.
Yes,
yes. And it was a very short lease, as you know.
Well, were you with us then when we were in Cook Street before that?
I was. Yeah. I just had my clinics in Cook Street for
a few
years after I was first elected. Yeah.
I was wondering if you were in Cook Street because they were very tiny rooms.
And that was over the GA rooms, yes. Yeah. That was the T. O'Sullivan's premises.
Before that, we were down a few doors here. That was before your time, though.
No, that was before my time. That's before my time.
You're dealing with national, international problems and situations every day, and here we have you this morning talking about buses, phones, water schemes, traffic. How do you manage to weld the two? Where does the Taoiseach end and the man here at the clinic begin?
Well, one has to make several parts of oneself in politics. A person who's in office particularly has possibly about three different jobs. Take my own case. I preside at Fianna Fáil meetings at the national executive level. I attend the party political meetings. I preside at government meetings. Then I have to do my own Dáil work. And then I have constituency work to do, not only here in my own constituency, but go around to other constituencies as well, to conventions and to annual dinners. And as well as that, then, of course, I try to live my own life. You don't get much time for it.
Somewhere here and there.
But then what I usually do is I set aside, for example, now, when after today, I have taken my notes, I'll set aside about an hour or two on Monday at home, Monday morning, or perhaps tomorrow evening, Sunday evening, and I'll expand on my notes while they're still fresh in my mind into my dictaphone. And then I'll get my typist to run off the account of the problems, and if there are matters that I must attend to myself, I'll do them, I'll get after them. If I can get my private secretary or somebody else in the office to pursue them, I'll do it that way. But there's a general turnover of business, so to speak.
There's a tremendous turnover of business on all morning downstairs, and I've been talking to the people. There are hundreds of them there, and an interesting aspect about you, I think, emerges in this. They talk about the minister for this and the minister for that, and they talk about Jack. They know you for a long time. Is this an advantage or a disadvantage?
Well, I suppose it's an advantage from the electoral point of view, because if you're known intimately to people, well, they're more inclined to vote for you then. If they kind of stand back from you in some awe as the Taoiseach, well, I don't like it that way anyway. I prefer people would talk to me in a friendly way, and I'd like to talk back to them. You don't often get friendly people coming in, of course. You often get a lot of abuse from time to time. But here on Saturday mornings, it's like a railway station, really. And, of course, we have a few TDs sitting in. And we don't try to transgress on each other's preserves. But some people do try to get around to us all.
You mean the one client might try to move?
He often does, yes. He might even then go to an opposition TD. That's his right, if he wants to do it that way. But normally speaking, if we find that another member of the Dáil, our Senate, has a problem in hand, well, we don't like to interfere or invade his territory.
All I'm asking is, could you use any influence to get a daughter into any nursing trainees hospital in Ireland?
Yeah, well, I know it's not a very easy problem, because I have from time to time received similar requests, and apparently it is a highly competitive.
There's no competition about it, face reality. I mean,
well, I don't know.
I'm telling you, I'm told
that there are interviews and examinations held.
And there are girls without it even cert have been called and got it.
Well, now, what's the girl's name?
Evelyn.
E-V-E-L-Y-N. And what age is she?
She's 18 now.
Aged 18.
Did her leaving this year, or last June.
Leaving cert in June 77.
77, yeah. Academically,
she got her exam ticket, yes. And has she applied to any?
She's applied to every hospital in Ireland, yes, and they all rebuked her. The only one that gave any kind of a little source of encouragement is the Bonds here.
Bonds, yes. Well, I'll make inquiries in the Bonds anyway. I'll see if I can do anything for her. I'll get on to the matron, and I'll let you know how I get on.
Consider.
But I can assure you that, as far as I know, these entry examinations are competitive, and I have made representations on behalf of a lot of people, and I haven't succeeded very well. So unless the applicant is, you know, able to... She might necessarily have the academic qualifications, but then there's an interview, and they assess their suitability.
She hasn't even got as far as being called for an interview.
So.
No.
Well, yes. Well, leave it with me. I'll make inquiry.
Midday. The day was wearing on. The house was packed. Incidentally, 95% of women didn't want to talk or wouldn't be recorded. The waiting room was full of women with children, old men gazing furtively at the racing sheets, the children crankily looking for ice cream and looking for the toilet. For the party machine, it was time for instant soup. For the Taoiseach, it was business as usual. Are your clinics much different when you're, say, out of power?
Not much, really. Except when you're in power, you perhaps get more of the national issues rather than the local ones. Because when you're in power, naturally people who have problems that might be of a wider nature than personal problems, these people tend to come to the minister or the teacher, as the case may be, in office, because they feel they're getting straight to the centre of power, so to speak.
There were times, too, this morning, people were good enough to allow us to sit in and tape their conversations. Other people were more private, more personal. It's very much like a confessional, isn't it?
It is indeed. As a matter of fact, when I used to come in here first, I used to sit in a room downstairs, and next to the bigger room, which is where the constituency party has its meetings, and we got old forms or seats, like in church benches, and people used to move up one after the other in turn, and maybe one out of three would address me as father when they'd come in, because it reminded so much of confession. But I mean, on the other side of it then, it is to an extent a confession in the sense that if people want to unburden themselves, if they want to give the whole story, they'll do that. If they feel they can depend upon you to keep confidential what ought to be kept confidential. But it's often always necessary to get the whole story in order to get to the kernel of the problem. And a lot of people aren't able to, you know, express themselves specifically enough. So it takes a lot of time, really, to get to the point that people want you to pursue. How much the problem?
Well, our problem is that we got a letter from the Minister for Posts and Telegraphs, and he wants to change our number.
He's
making a 6-digit.
Yes, I see.
And I have tried to arrange a meeting with him.
Mm-hmm.
And,
excuse me a second. Hello? I don't know if he's still there. I'll inquire. Just a second, please. Your problem seems to be that the Post and Telegraphs want to change your telephone number by inserting another digit.
Yes.
From 59999 to 50999.
Our phone number is 52211.
Oh, and
that's only just
an example. I see. I'm sorry.
But they want to change it from 52211 to 50211.
Yeah, yes.
And we're all, I'm actually the chairman of the taxi co-op at the moment,
yes,
and we're all taxi drivers who formed a taxi co-op 7 years ago.
Yes.
Because we felt that the people of Cork needed something like that.
But do you think the change would affect your business?
We feel that the change will affect our business in a big way.
But according to this notification that you got, they say that it's necessary to change in order to provide for the further growth of the telephone network. Obviously, there's some technical consideration involved.
I presume that the reason for that is this new telephone exchange is going up in Churchfield.
Yes.
But, as I said, I've been trying to get a meeting with Tom Fitzpatrick on it, and I only sent a letter off to him yesterday.
I see.
Originally, I got out to Tom Meaney because I know Tom personally.
Yes.
And, he had told me to get in touch with Tom Fitzpatrick.
But
I tried to get in touch with him on the telephone, and I didn't get anywhere. I was sort of pushed from one corner to another.
Yes, but he might not have been available at the time you
were in. Well, he wasn't himself, but his secretary was.
But at all events, it wouldn't seem at first sight, anyway, that there'd be any great problem when they say here that callers in the initial stages would be told that the number has been changed.
They'd be told that, but if you're on E, now that phone number that we have there was originally belonged to CAB, and we actually built our business on that phone number. If you ask it, if you walked out in the street and asked anybody for a phone number for a taxi company, that's the first one that comes to mind.
Yes, 52211. Well, now, I don't know, I don't understand the complexities of the telephone network, but if this is technically necessary, I wonder,
yes,
would it be possible for them to make an exception in your case?
Well,
I don't know, but I can
hope that they would,
yeah,
but we're also prepared to take another number.
Other than the one they suggest?
If it was possible to get all the files or something like that, we take it, or if they made it... 55221.
I see. But you think that the O will upset people?
It'll upset.
They won't be able to keep to memorize it as easily.
Well, that's the whole idea.
I see. So if they can't retain the O number, then you prefer another number that would be easily memorized, so people who would want to ring for a taxi wouldn't have to look up a telephone directory.
Is the clinic a very important part of political life?
It is. It is, and it is getting more so. Some people decry it. Some people say that it oughtn't to happen, that we are sent to the Dáil as legislators. But you can't legislate for a community. You can't legislate for a country unless you know what the needs and the problems of the people and of the country are. And I think there's no better way of making oneself familiar with these problems than to meet the people face-to-face who have the problems and who are suffering under perhaps various difficulties or lack of knowledge of their rights. So in that way, I think it's important too. You know what people's problems are, and you get to know then how to solve them, and if necessary, to promote or try to influence legislation in the direction that can help.
Especially to see you.
How are you enjoying Lewisburg?
Oh, I love Lewisburg.
Would you come back to Cork now again?
Oh, well, I would come back to Cork. Love Cork. The spark is for Cork all the time, you know.
As long as to be the south side, not the north side, isn't it?
Well, it doesn't matter, really. Cork is Cork. It's a pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
And, I didn't know that you would be here this morning, but I'm meeting my sister around 2 o'clock, and I thought, well, I'll just chance and see you soon.
Oh, no.
There, you look marvellous.
Sorry not to ride, feeling in good form. Except I'm a bit hungry now.
I'd say so. And how is Mrs. Lynch?
Well, she's fairly well. She's a touch of a cold at the moment. But she's
is
all
she?
Right.
We'll give her my regards.
I will, of course, indeed.
And I don't think I have much more to say
to you. Okay.
Do you find that they come in, perhaps, old people, just to see you, to say hello to you? Does that ever happen?
Well, some people do, yes. You'd often, and particularly people who, perhaps from the country, who might have known your father or something like that, and just say hello. They want to say hello to Dan Lynch's son. They knew him when he was a small boy in West Cork and that kind of thing. Or if people had been away for a few years, I've often had fellas coming back, say, from San Francisco. They might be in Cork on holidays, and they come in for a chat about old times. I needn't tell you I don't have much time for chats, because I could see anything up to 40 or 50 people in the course of a Saturday session here. Not so much nowadays, because I have a lot of help, but there was a time when there were only 2 of us Fianna Fáil TDs in the city, and I was often here into the late afternoon, having started at about 9:30 in the morning.
It was now 3 o'clock in the afternoon, a long day since 10:30, and the young girl and her baby sat wearily, but hopefully waiting for their moment.
Hello.
What's your name?
Tell the gentleman your name, please.
Byro.
Byro.
What is it?
Byro.
Byro?
Byro.
So that's a pen, isn't it?
I'm living in a flat on the south side, and my bedroom is absolutely reeking in dampness. My kitchen wallpaper is just filled. All the walls are stores. It was coming down so much in a row, you know?
Yeah.
We're living and eating in a room 10 by 8. My child has been in hospital.
She
fell down the steps with a fractured skull. She got boarding twice because we're confined, like, you know, to the little room.
There's only one room.
We're living in the room. We're living and eating in the room 10 by 8, but we have a bedroom.
And a bedroom
outside
as well,
yes. But she got burned twice because, you know, I'm watching her the whole time, but accidents happen when she has no scope.
I know, there's no room for her to move around.
No, and also I'm attending Dr. Shanahan, the specialist in St. Finbar's. I'm suffering from hyperventilation.
I see.
My heartbeat is going too fast. They said it's due to tension, and I was also with O'Callaghan and suffering, he said, from the worst form of migraine.
I see.
Also brought on my tension from where I'm living.
I see. Yeah. Is this the only child you have?
Yes,
I am. Yeah. What age is she?
She's two.
Age two.
Okay.
It won't be long more, Nora, if you'll be on your way. And your husband, is he working?
He's working in CIE, Mr.
Chan. Mm.
There's a bungalow vacant, you see, in John Murphy Road.
Mm-hmm, yes.
And I'm hoping to get that, you know, as well as that. My mother had a very bad accident, and her hip is in pieces, and she has a dislocated shoulder.
Yeah, and is she living nearby?
She is, you see, her left arm is useless to her, and it means I have to go up home and help her, you know. And that really I can't afford if I ever do move. I can't afford to go far, you know.
Yes, yeah. And is there anybody else to look after but you?
No.
There must be times, too, Tishik, when you find it very moving.
It is. One feels tremendous sympathy for people, no matter how much experience you have with this. You never become callous about it. You never become, you know, too objective. You kind of feel that their problem is part of yours. And I'm not being too sanctimonious in this now, but you do know that some people do have problems, and I won't say a pleasure, but it's, you know, some satisfaction to feel that you can help them in some way. As I said, they don't often always need help because they'll get it anyway. It's their entitlement under the law.